The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studios and streaming on Facebook Live. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Before I get to the top stories, can I share a listener email with you?
Of course.
One of my favorite emailers is a woman named Linda, who she never sends frivolous stuff. Every time she sends me something, it's relevant. It's spot on for the perspective of the show. It's just, I always know it's going to be valuable to read Linda's emails.
That must be refreshing.
She's been a, you don't know how refreshing it is. Oh, man, you don't know. But Linda sent me an email, and like I said, she's been just a long, long time listener. And the subject line was Seattle versus Little Rock. I thought this was just really interesting because I know she's very involved, member of the community, lives in the city here. Dory, my husband and I just returned from a three-week road trip. We purchased a car in Chicago, spent a few days with our son at Notre Dame, where he is employed, then headed south to many places we have not yet seen despite our many years of family road trips. We spent a lot of time in Kentucky, Tennessee, Mississippi, Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado. I did not want to come home. It was refreshing not to see homeless encampments and drug addicts. I know there are drug problems in many of these places, but for some reason, people are not living in tents, campers, RVs, and the like. The most poignant time came while driving through many miles of cotton fields in Mississippi. I insisted on getting out of the car and touching the cotton balls that were blooming on the plants. As a Kansas native, I know corn and wheat, but not cotton. As we continued driving, we passed a cotton gin, and my husband suggested we stop and see how cotton is processed. It was a slow day there, and only four employees were working, painting machinery before the harvest. The young man who showed us around was running the business that his grandfather had left his family. An African-American man was listening to us, and when he heard we were from Seattle, he told us he used to play for the Sonics. He dropped lots of names and said after the Sonics, he played on many other teams. In Europe, the Philippines, ended up coaching in Dallas, married a flight attendant, but was now divorced and living in this tiny, tiny town in Mississippi. He had fallen on hard times. His mother passed away, and he returned to where he spent his childhood and could live in her house. When we returned to the road, I looked his name up on Wikipedia, and he has a huge resume. He really did play everywhere he stated. Standing in that cotton gin, it struck me why Trump is beloved in flyover country. In my elite Capitol Hill neighborhood, no one gives a damn about anyone in the middle of the country. I find them to be the most wonderful people. Seattle has become mean, hostile, and cold. The day after we arrived home, I sent my husband to the farmer's market on Capitol Hill because I can't stand to go there. He came home agitated because he saw two men shooting up heroin in front of the Capitol Hill train station. On our trip, we made an overnight stop in Little Rock, and my husband decided he needed to have some laundry done at the hotel. The clean laundry was returned in a beautiful box that could accommodate a wedding dress. I've attached the enclosed note. Can you imagine that note being written anywhere on the West Coast? And she sent me a picture of this handwritten note that came back with her husband's laundry.
I love it.
Have a blessed night, and may you stay empowered, uplifted, and at peace. I love you, and God bless you in a mighty way. Nene. From laundry.
Wow.
How cool is that?
That is awesome.
It is awesome. And you know, I was thinking about that because we were talking at the beginning of the show in kind of the microcosm where she says that the people in flyover country, they just live a different life and they have been forgotten. They've been forgotten by all the major media that, you know, plays to L.A. and New York. They were forgotten by politicians and they felt that way. And that, you know, I was talking at the beginning of the show today. The microcosm of this is what's happening in King County right now, where they've passed this gun ordinance, one of the toughest gun laws in the country. And 7 of the 9 King County Council members live in Seattle. Mm. They don't know anything about what life is like in, you know, Enumclaw and Black Diamond and Auburn. Maple Valley and out
Salton, Snohomish.
Yeah, yeah. Way out there. Mm-hmm. And you got Seattle council members who are telling up in the wild sky wilderness where, you know, if you're driving on Highway 2, mm-hmm. you are in Snohomish County most of the way, but then you dip down like an hour east into a little northeast sliver of King County. And there are people who live out there. There are people who have cabins out there.
Right.
Their life is so different from the lives of these 7 urbanists who are on the King County Council. And I find it ludicrous that these council members think they can tell the people who live in the wilderness of eastern King County, the most rural of areas, that how to live their life. And this is the chasm that exists now, whether it's Little Rock versus Seattle or Seattle versus rural King County. We got so many politicians who are so completely out of touch, and they make no effort to be in touch and to represent everybody because they know their re-election is going to depend on playing to their base in Seattle.
And I think that can be said not just about politicians, but especially today, just people, anyone who has a different opinion. I mean, people don't want to get to know them anymore to realize that you may have a ton in common, actually, but you're not listening anymore.
Well, it's like, you know, you and I have talked about it, and I know I heard about the show when I was gone last week, and I think you and I have very different perspective
sure.
on this whole Kavanaugh thing. And
but I would argue, because I would argue, though, that if you and I are friends outside of the show, because the things that really count,
yeah,
we are similar.
Exactly. And we don't talk about any of this stuff off the air either. And I love you. And so we can disagree on an issue like this. And your perspective's informed on your life. Like the Kavanaugh thing, I've gotten some of the most vile, despicable emails and text messages from people who have accused me because of, you know, I support Kavanaugh. They accuse me of being a pervert because I coached girls basketball. And the
word pervert would not ever come into my mind to think of you. I mean, you
right.
are an amazing role model for women.
If we were going to take the word of somebody who sits down and sends an email about who and what I am because they disagree with me politically or socially, and that's where I say, I'm not ready to just take the word of somebody. I mean, and so that's my perspective. And I understand your perspective. And we come at it from two different
places.
But
I think that's the key, though. And I actually got some kind of a very negative comment said about me. And I made the decision to actually respond to it.
A mistake.
But
we got to talk about that one.
I know. But I wanted to see, because I wanted to explain to this person, someone who lives down in the South End, who thinks that I have a backwards view of the world, because he has pegged me as a liberal. And I try to explain, you know what, a lot of times I will offer perspectives just to give a different perspective, not because I necessarily think this is the way it is, but just to, you know, and it's okay to have different perspectives without attacking each other.
And the thing is, on whether it's that issue or any other, I'm not going to say, you know, I can't work with you, or you're making me cry because you disagree with me. I can't tell you the number of text messages I got yesterday that said that. I can't believe your female coworkers aren't walking out on you. I'm sobbing as I listen to you. And I'm thinking, how pathetic are some people? You hear an opinion that you disagree with, and you start sobbing? That says nothing about my opinion. That says everything about your weakness and your intolerance and all of that.
But the one little thing I will say, I mean, and we talked about how rough last week was, and it was rough. And I know that the feedback you're getting is because it's very hard to peel away the politics of what was discussed or what's been discussed, and to look at it just in terms of, you know, people who have their own stories of abuse and what has happened and the impact that all this discussion is having on them.
Yeah.
And it's hard to separate. It's hard to peel out the political aspects.
And that brings me full circle to the fact that we have, our top story, that we have King County Council members. And it was did you know New York Vinny was back around here?
I just saw on Facebook. Vinny, hello.
This Vinny is testifying, and I totally disagree with Vin, but he was on the news story on Cairo 7, our news partners. He was testifying in favor. So in case you don't know, King County has embraced what Seattle has, one of the toughest gun laws in the country. If somebody breaks into your house and steals your gun, if the gun wasn't locked up, you can be fined $10,000. You can go to jail for a year if that gun is then used in the commission of a crime. And Vinny, who I love Vinny.
Right.
I couldn't disagree more with what he said at this hearing yesterday.
I can't believe that I have a locked car, a locked medicine bottle, a locked home. I keep other things in my house that are important under lock and key. It is incumbent upon you to be responsible when you own a gun.
But what this law says, if somebody has the gun in their nightstand and locks the door of their house and somebody kicks in that door or breaks a window and steals the gun, that the crime victim gun owner can be prosecuted because of a bunch of whack job Seattle council people, who are on the King County Council, the 7 out of 9.
Do you honestly think, though, that would be prosecuted if that scenario was given?
Yes, that's the way the law is written. And yes, they have such contempt for gun owners. Absolutely, they would want to make an example of it. And so I'm telling you, so some guy out in Black Diamond, and Vinny said there was, I lock my car. Well, locking your house should be enough. Now, for me, gun safe. I believe in gun safes. So I just think that it's not up to government to tell me what I must do. I choose to do it out of my sense of caution. But he said, I lock my car. Well, you know what? That shouldn't be enough by this gun law standard. I said earlier, you should have the club on your steering wheel, because if somebody breaks your car and steals it and then kills somebody, that you should be prosecuted. That's the analogy to this gun law. If somebody steals your pill bottle that you talked about and then overdoses on some pain meds, you should be prosecuted because they broke into your house and you didn't have them in a safe. And those examples are as insane as this gun example. But again, what are the people in Seattle, these council members, what do they know about what life is like in Black Diamond, where the response time in some of those northeastern portions of King County, you know what the response time is?
What?
For police? About 45 minutes. There simply is no police
coverage out there. There's a lot of land between,
yes,
between houses.
And so you tell someone that he wants to have quick access to his gun if somebody kicks in his door in the middle of the night, and maybe he leaves to go to the grocery store for 5 minutes and doesn't put it in the safe, and then comes back, finds his gun is stolen, and he's going to be prosecuted for that. I mean, this is just pure insanity. But this is what happens when you have out-of-touch politicians who make no effort to understand anybody's life other than the people who can reelect them. And by the way, in the case of the last presidential election, a candidate could have gotten elected if she had even tried to care at all about flyover country. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, big local.
Amazon has announced that it is going to pay $15 minimum wage everywhere in the country, which is going to be a pretty substantial raise for some of their employees, because I think in some parts of the country, their warehouse workers are only making like $8 an hour.
Right.
And so it's a huge announcement by Jeff Bezos. Right, Kashama?
It is magical thinking to believe that somehow you will be able to win a tax like this without making enemies out of Jeff Bezos. No, Jeff Bezos is our enemy.
Yeah, you tell him, sister. So that was Sawant when she wanted the head tax a few months ago. So now she's talking about Amazon raising its company's minimum wage to $15 an hour. Now, do you finally think that Bezos is not your enemy?
This is not out of some benevolence from Jeff Bezos. This is out of social struggle that they are being forced to make this concession, and we should channel this victory into movements to unionize warehouse workers.
This is what I love about Sawat. The time she hung up on me, the one time she came on the show, she was vilifying the rich. And I said, you stand on a stage next to the head of the SEIU who makes $180,000 a year off the backs of his rank and file, many of whom make $30,000 a year. Do you condemn the labor union leaders who are rich by your standard? She hung up on me because she's such a coward. She can't answer a question. She won't talk to anybody who asks her a tough question, who exposes what a stinking hypocrite she is. And the $15 an hour, by the way, not enough.
$15 an hour is not enough to live on, given the cost of living in the Puget Sound region.
When did that become the standard? You want enough to live on? It's up to you. Work a second job. Improve your job skills so that an employer will want to give you more than minimum wage. Don't rely on the benevolence of some cult-like government official to say, oh, we'll just take money from somebody else. Oh, and by the way, $15 an hour in Seattle, done a bang-up job. It's hurt the take-home pay of the lowest-income workers in Seattle. Come on, let's give Bezos a little love for this.
We don't win better workplace conditions, let alone a systemic change away from capitalism, by believing that billionaires are on our side. No, they are not on our side.
Wow. Systemic? What's that other word? Those are some big words for a dopey socialist.
We don't win better workplace conditions, let alone a systemic change away from capitalism.
Oh, yeah. Capitalism. She knows economics. She taught it at a community college, you know. And that is your big lead this hour.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Ursula's going to check the news. Then we're going to count down our favorite sound bites of the day. Coming up next. Okay, so Charles Schumer. Just heard him say that, you know, essentially, since it's a woman who accused, Kavanaugh, that if you don't believe her and just think she's a political actor. So I've been watching all these political ads, you know, Rossi and Kim Schreier. That's particularly nasty, that one.
Poor children on Medicaid. Many turned away from healthcare providers. It happened at Dr. Kim Schreier's practice.
Okay, if a woman is accusing Kim Schreier of turning poor children away, well, we have to believe her, right? I mean, that's kind of what Chuck Schumer is saying, that if it's one accuser, a woman would never do something like that for political purposes, well, there's a voice actress who was hired for a political ad and for political purposes and for, you know, whatever she got paid for that. I'm not saying that it's a perfect analogy. I'm just saying just because one person says something about one other person, it doesn't make it so. It doesn't make it true. And these political ads are a perfect example of it, where everybody's the most evil, heinous person alive. Dino Rossi is, too, apparently.
And Dino Rossi's still putting the screws to the middle class.
Hey, since that dude's accusing Dino Rossi, we got to believe him. I don't know who to vote for. If we have one accuser of Rossi and one accuser of Schreier, and I'm supposed to always believe one accuser, who do I vote for? I'm going to have to write myself in again. Okay, let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
This is Dory Monson's Awesome Audio. Clips of the day.
Awesome Audio brought to you by Brown Bear Car Wash. So here's another example. This Julie Swetnick, who's the third accuser that Michael Avenatti has as an accuser of Kavanaugh. And she is a loon. I watched her MSNBC interview in its entirety. She is a full-fledged lunatic. And in her sworn statement, under penalty of perjury, she said that she saw Brett Kavanaugh spike punch at a party, and then there was a gang raping of girls. So yesterday, she goes on MSNBC, and they said, wow, according to your sworn statement, you saw him spike the punch with some knockout drug so they could gang rape these girls?
Number three.
Did you see Brett Kavanaugh, you know, spiking the punch, putting green
alcohol
in the punch?
Well, I saw him giving red Solo cups to quite a few girls during that time frame, and there was green punch at those parties. And I would not take one of those glasses from Brett Kavanaugh.
Mark Kavanaugh gets the name wrong. She said that now she never saw him spike the punch in that interview. She said, but I saw him near the punch bowl, which is not what she said in her sworn declaration with Avenatti. And so are we supposed to believe a loon like that who can't even stand by her story a couple days later? At number two, Katie Couric. Hey, you want some more fake news? Katie Couric was talking about major news operations. Did you know that not one major news operation is run by a woman? Every one of them is run by a man.
Number two.
You know, obviously the male hierarchy has been in place there for years, and it's time for it to end. But they're not the only network that has a male hierarchy. If you look at the news presidents at every major broadcast and cable network, they're all male.
Oops. Fake news. Because the most watched cable news network, Fox News, is run by a woman. But Katie Couric, so that she could make some point about how men dominate everything, she said every major news network, broadcast and cable, is run by a man. Fox News, run by a woman. Nice try, Katie. At number one in our awesome audio, as I was driving into work this morning, I saw a big, huge backhoe in Lake City tearing apart these planters. They had put planters in to beautify the neighborhood, to put trees and flowers, but there was only one problem. The homeless drug addicts were pooping and piddling in the planters. They were sleeping in the planters. And because it was becoming just a filthy stench attractant, they are tearing out these big concrete planters that they put in 20 years ago. Channel 4, ComoNews.com, they talked to two of the homeless people who live in one of the planters, and we found out the real story about all this.
Number one.
You know why they're removing the trees on the planter?
Yeah, because we've been sitting there. We've been camping out there.
Do you have any idea why they're moving you?
I know something about Bush presidency, about Iraqi war in Libya.
The Bush presidency, the Iraqi war in Libya. And if somebody tried to scoop her up off the streets and say, you know, as New York City did 20 years ago when Giuliani was mayor and he cleaned up New York City, if somebody tried to scoop up this woman who says they're removing the planters in Lake City because of the Bush presidency, the Iraqi war in Libya, the ACLU would come in and say, no, you got her, let her live on the streets. And that's one of the huge problems we're dealing with right now. Those are our favorite sound bites of the day. Today's sign is next. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Okay, before we head out of here into this Tuesday afternoon, it's time for today's edition of
Today's Sign that the End is Near.
Today's sign, the world is soon coming to an end. You know, the bowling industry, it's just barely hanging on by its fingernails. When I was a kid, oh man, I loved going to Sunset Bowl. You know, I won the Seafair Junior Pirate Tournament there. Summer of 74, I was 12 years old. So Sunset Bowl, that was a big hangout. You had the U Village bowling lanes, Leilani lanes at the top of Holman Road, out on Greenwood. I don't know if it's called Greenwood Bowl. There's the Palladium. There are bowling alleys all over the place. And, of course, when I was a little kid, you got a score sheet when you rented your shoes, and you had to keep score by hand. But that was confusing to people. So then, also when I was a fairly little kid, some of the nicer bowling alleys, they put in the automatic scoring. So you didn't have to have the tedium of learning how to score. I always kind of enjoyed scoring bowling by hand. The bowling alley that was out on 125th and Greenwood, the other thing that was cool about that was when the ball would come back after you hit the pins, it came back above ground. You got to watch it flying down alongside the gutter back to the ball return. Most of the others, the ball return had a little cover on it so you couldn't see it, but you could actually watch the ball come screaming toward you adjacent to the gutter in between lanes. That was always exciting. There was a time that I totally missed out on because every bowling alley when I was a kid had the automatic pin setters. You know, there was a time 100 years ago when the bowling alleys had people setting the pins. They had a bar that hung over the pin area, and guys would hang by their knees upside down, and they would, with their hands, toss aside the pins that scattered and put the pins on the dots to reset for the frame. The manual pin setters. I never saw that. I thought that'd be cool. I thought about all of this because of this horrible story out of Colorado where the owner of a bowling alley has died after getting stuck in the pin-setting machine. It's the town of Florence, Colorado, 100 miles southwest of Denver. Sunday afternoon, police got a call. They found 65-year-old Hector Rodriguez stuck in the machine at Fremont Lanes. He was unconscious and not breathing, and emergency responders pronounced him dead at the scene. They say no foul play is suspected. It's believed to be an accident. Yeah. Man, you just go into work at a bowling alley, and all of a sudden, this precious gift of our life can just, boom, end like that in a pin-setting machine. Just crazy. Today's signed story number two. A guy was making some money on the side by driving for Uber. And that meant his wife had some free time when hubby was working his second job. Well, imagine the surprise of everybody when this guy's wife revealed that she and her lover mistakenly ordered an Uber that turned out to be the one her husband was driving. The woman, they only gave her first name, Yemi, and the man, Jesus Barrios, they met before deciding to move to a private location, so they ordered an Uber to take them to a motel. The pair was notified that their driver, Leonardo, would be picking them up. It turns out the woman's husband had reportedly borrowed Leonardo's car and Uber account to drive that night. Leonardo's a friend of the woman's husband. And so when he showed up, and they already had the destination. You know, you enter your destination. So the guy knew, the husband knew, that the couple he was picking up had ordered the Uber to take them to a motel. It is unknown what has happened after the husband discovered his wife and lover. But I'm guessing that marriage is in some trouble. It's just a thought that I have here. All right, and then finally in today's sign, with all the crime that is bombarding not just our region, but the entire country, you know what the solution is? What businesses are doing all around the country? They're installing more and more eyes. stars in the sky. Walmart says they are fighting back against crime with more security than ever. You go to Walmart, you are being watched. And the shoppers seem to be fine with it. Shopper Elva Roberts said, I love it. I know it's needed. I've been here at Walmart when I knew that somebody was there observing me getting in and out of my car. She says she feels nervous and vulnerable when she's putting things in and out of her car, from her cart. And she says having more eyes in the sky watching her is comforting. The police are pretty excited about it, too. They said that with more and more private businesses putting up surveillance cameras, it always helps them in their investigations. But you know, and we've seen so many stories where private company videos have helped solve crimes. But I have a feeling it's been so incremental for the frogs in the water that's heating up to a boil. If you told any of us 20 years ago there were going to be cameras watching our every step, people would have said, no way, I don't want to lose that privacy. Now it's like, oh yeah, that's good. I want more people watching. It's too dangerous out here. And all of that is... Today's sign, the end is near.
Don't try, turn the tables instead.
I gotta get out of here. I have said everything that I have to say for today. But I'm gonna go home and think up a bunch of new stuff for tomorrow's Wednesday extravaganza. Thanks to Dave Wyman for coming on with us. The Ron and Don Show's coming up next. And I will see you back here tomorrow. High noon. Head up.
I make a year. I mean, even if I told you, you wouldn't believe it.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.